Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, August 5th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the website, whyagain.org. Thanks to the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, if you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the productive, very effective and efficient internal guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. So you can read about it in that chapter in that book, but then you can also download the actual process itself. It's a simple PDF file. You click the link, download it, print it out, and then you can copy it as often as you'd like and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also download a host of audio files of shows just like this one where someone's been stepped through the worksheet process, and or they've called in to give powerful testimonials. And if you can't call in live and ask for help on the radio show itself, and you don't live someplace where they've got a support group that where people can help step you through it, that's a wonderful way to learn how to use these tools to best advantage. And they can serve as a tutorial. You can listen to them over and over again and have wonderful benefit, even if you don't have your own private coach. It's kind of like having your own private coach, listening to those audio files where people have called in with real problems and been stepped through the use of the tool. And in many of them, you can actually hear the shift in energy and emotion. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon, and if you choose to tap on that, it will let you download an app that's completely free and private and contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. It also has a way for you to, on any page, click a link and type in a question, which will get emailed to Jeannie, and they'll then address it on the internet show and then send you a notification about what day and about what time they addressed your comment or question, and you can get access to their thoughts about your questions or comments through that process. So we greatly appreciate it when people do all of the above. One big reason we encourage people to do that is because it's been our experience that the more people use these tools, learn about them and use them and practice regular use of them, the better their lives get. The next reason we really appreciate it when people do that is because it tends to lead to comments, questions, answers, testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please email us. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeanie@yagain.org. Or you can just call in directly. If you're here online with us, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. As I mentioned, it's very, very beneficial for us when you do that, because it makes it easier for us to live into our intention with this work, which is to be of service. So, 563-999-3581. Before we get started today, I wanted to throw it open for questions or comments, because we had two or three people throw their hands up at the same time at the end of the show yesterday, and only one of them was able to get in the last 15 minutes. So, if you have a comment or a question or a testimonial or an answer, give us a call, 563-999-3581. And once you've called that number, press 1 on your phone. Let us know how we can be of service to you today. Yesterday we were addressing the question about, what does it mean to hold space for someone, to hold the space of love for someone, and sharing some thoughts on that? Area code 760, is this Ann?
Yeah. First of all, I just want to report I'm working on 100% from the COVID, so I'm probably at 80-85%, so that's good. My voice is starting to come back. When you were talking, well, I was re-listening to yesterday, the first half hour that I missed, and so that was good, because I realized that as I'm listening and just looking at people different and practicing doing that anyway, the friend that I was helping who's beginning, I don't know how to interpret, I don't remember how the doctor interpreted her diagnosis, but anyway, it has to do with her mental health. Either dementia or Alzheimer's beginning. Anyway, I've been helping her, and so I overtaxed myself, so that kind of, you know, got my immune system going to pick up on this virus. However, I'm dealing with the granddaughters and are helping them out, you know, with things I've learned and where things are, and so they're finally down to get rid of the dog, because we spend a lot of time cleaning up after the dog every day. Because my friend was not able, well, who knows what's going on in her brain, was not able or chosen to be able to get up and let the dog out. Anyway, so she's there, that one of the other ones that's trying to gather the information together to get the dog out of there is texted, and so I called her back. She wanted to know where the stuff for the dog was, if that stuff. And she's one who, when I first met her, the four-letter words did not come out, you know, and I met her fiancé, et cetera. They were there, you know, saying what they were going to start doing. But she lives in a different city up north Florida here. Anyway, they're down. They're dealing with this. And so I called her and I said, it's much easier for me to tell you over the phone where the folder is for the dog. So I did. And she discovered it. And the first thing out of her mouth was, F, yeah, really excited, right? It's like, for the first time, I mean, I guess I'm excited about it because I didn't have to think about it. That's not what the adjective I use, go around using. However, looking at these girls who are trying to help their grandma, and she's, the grandma is the one, my friend is the one, her son died in a shower in a hotel alone and was discovered. He wasn't discovered for like 12 hours. And so these daughters, two daughters, biological daughters and a stepdaughter are having to not only deal with this. This was only about 4 months ago that he passed. But then my friend, who sort of kind of, from my perception, is kind of in denial in and out of it. She thinks she's not dealing with it, but going through the grieving process. So they're trying to, you know, move her closer to them and help get her in a place, you know, that can get her help on a daily basis. So one of the other granddaughters had recently come down. Day after I got my symptoms showed up for COVID. So anyway, it's the first time where no judgment thoughts came from my mouth. I guess that's where I'm going, is that, okay, this is her. I know some of the background of what these girls grew up with, and I look at her differently than I would of, you know, rather than jumping or, oh, my God, she's using that word kind of thing. It was like I laughed. I laughed because even though she used that adjective, she was excited to find what she was looking for. And I go, anybody else would be excited for finding something, you know, they were looking for. I get excited when I find, especially if I misplace something or I don't know where something is and then I find it. I get excited, but I just choose to use different adjectives or no adjective at all. So it's part of, I just know it's continuing to hear and apply and practice this work at looking at things differently. And I'm just really grateful. So I just wanted to share that because it was exciting as she was. I mean, you know. Anyway, thank you for letting me share.
Well, and it sounds like there's that, literally there's a difference in the space you're holding. In other words, in how you're able to maintain and or establish a new pattern of centeredness, mindfulness, respectfulness, calm within your own mind. And that's another way to think about holding the space for somebody. Right, that regardless of what they're doing, I'm staying calm, I'm staying what I would consider respectful, I'm staying what I would consider, you know, based in gratitude or appreciation or respect in the face of all these options that other people display in front of me.
Right.
And that's a practice for most of us, right? There are default habits and thoughts that we aren't even aware are running us. But, you know, Gabor Mate is teaching and he says, look, you know, the truth of what's going on inside of us is the thing that drives us. And many of us are driven by these things that get stirred up in us that we don't know are there. This is almost identical to Dr. Michael Rice's teachings with different words around it. It's so the healing, the therapeutic work is to help introduce people to the truth of what's going on in their thought pattern. And then when they see it and bring it to conscious awareness, it can no longer sneak up on them and drive their behavior. So if I have a pattern of being upset or judging somebody because they use swear words, or they do name calling or they insult somebody. And I instantly go to judgment of them about how bad or wrong they are for doing that. I'm blind to the fact that I'm getting upset with them for judging or doing something that I think is wrong. I'm doing exactly the same thing in that moment that they're doing. When they're judging somebody else and swearing or name-calling, and then I'm saying, oh, they shouldn't judge that, they shouldn't use that word, I'm doing the judging. I'm doing the I'm better than, and I'm blind to it. And so the process of healing in therapy, the healing and wholeness in therapy comes from finding ways to get introduced to what's really going on in my thought process that I've been unaware of, whether for days, weeks, months, years, or decades. And, you know, it's lovely for me to come across the same message, whether it's from, you know, Gabor Mate, or it's from Michael Rice, or Guy Finley, or the teachings of Ho'oponopono, or the work of Byron Katie, or Diedrich Wolsack. They're all teaching the same thing from a slightly different perspective. And that sounds like what's happening with you in this example is that you've opened and softened enough to understand that if you get upset and have a negative reaction in response to somebody swearing or name-calling, that's your work to do, not theirs. That the thing that's right, creating your experience of life in the moment is not their swearing or name-calling. It's your choice of how to interpret and respond to their swearing or name-calling. And if it's brand new to you and you're recoiling from it because it's new, that's a reflexive, that's a taught, you know, it's either an innate reflexive reaction to something that's new and therefore may not be safe, or it's something that's been taught. We don't talk that way. Civilized people don't use that word. Nice people don't swear, et cetera. Now, if I have that response in the middle of somebody swearing, and I think I know I'm right and they're wrong, I am as blind to my situation as I am to the origins of theirs. Because I'm being run by a pattern of programmed thought that's been conditioned into me, and I think I'm making the choice. I think I'm free. I think I'm higher than them because I'm not swearing or I'm not name-calling or I'm not whatever. But in the moment when I have a negative reaction to someone else's expression, choice of words, or actions, what's happening is I'm in that moment being shown that I'm attached to a set of beliefs about the world that are not useful. It's not the actuality of what's going on, and it's a set of beliefs and judgments about it. And in the talk we listened to on Tuesday in the group with Guy Finley, it was the idea that if I have that moment of tightness and tension, the best use of it for me is to recognize that now, in this moment, it's time for me to outgrow what I have been attached to and identified with, because the flow of life is showing me that who I've thought I was is powerless to take me any further than what's being presented by life in this moment. Because when I'm not triggered to upset, I have all these spiritual thoughts and I want to be loving and I think, oh, yes, I'm getting so enlightened and I've read The Way of Mastery 113 times now and I can't wait until I finish it the 114th time. And in the next moment, I get triggered to upset. And if there's anything about my mind that wants me to believe the upset is being caused by something outside of me, it means I haven't absorbed the lesson that's being offered in The Way of Mastery. It means I haven't even gotten past the first lesson, much less the multiple repetitions of it that come in various forms. And even in the 17th lesson, which is the most recent one we finished reading, where it says, The goal is to accept 100% responsibility for creating every emotion I experience. The goal is to turn the focus inside. If I want to accelerate my spiritual growth, it said, I need to spend more time looking inward, less time looking at the outside world, and no time judging either myself or the outside world. I need to be owning my creation of life, my creation of emotion, my creation of my experience of life. And anytime I get tight or tense or angry and I judge somebody as being wrong because they use a swear word or because they dress in a way that shows more skin than I think they should, or you know, they eat food that I think is unhealthy or whatever, anytime I get tight or tense or into judgment about that, it's life showing me, hey, Tim, would you like to see what's keeping you from knowing me and loving me as the flow of life? Here it is. It's right here in this moment. It's your unwillingness to go with the flow and stay in the loving space. It's your unwillingness to understand you're creating your experience of life. You're creating your emotions. You're creating the judgment.
Well, I'm glad you just used some other examples with that too, because there's more practice on some of the other things that you just mentioned that I recognize as judgmental, you know, the way people dress or something like that. Which, from the way, so it goes back to, like you said, the way I was brought up. Hey, you know, you didn't use that kind of language, and you didn't dress, you know, provocative, because that meant you were like in the red, you know, from the red district or whatever. So I think that's the next level. I mean, it's almost like God was showing me, okay, if you can do it with this language, you know, from somebody, and you have the compassion for them and what's going in their situation, then you can do it with these other judgmental thoughts as well. So, okay. Thank you.
You're most welcome and deserving. Any other thoughts today?
No, I'm complete. Thank you. Blessings.
All right. Blessings to you. So 563-999-3581. What, if anything, from yesterday's talk and or what we've just done, chatted about with Anne, might have brought some questions up for you or comments you'd like to share with us before we move on into the back into the way of mastery, whether it's lesson 17 or 18. 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, and we can have a chat. I've gone back and forth about whether or not to reread lesson 17 or to read parts of it. And here in talking to Anne, we were just repeating and recapping some parts of lesson 17, specifically the idea that Lesson 17 echoes, not quite verbatim, but essentially the very same message that we get in the very first lesson, which is that I'm creating my experience of life in each moment. I'm creating every emotion I experience. And lesson 17 is calling us to be there for the awareness of that, to step into practicing being more vigilant and aware of that, turning the focus inside myself. And it says, you know, if you want to accelerate your spiritual growth, you'll spend more time turning inside and looking at yourself and watching what your thoughts are doing and where they come from and how they're creating your emotions. And you'll spend a lot less time looking at others and the outside world, and you will spend no time, none whatsoever, blaming anyone or anything outside of you for your experience of life, for the emotions you're creating. And that, to my way of thinking, of course, there are several other steps and levels in the Lesson 17 that we've read, that's the essential message. Lesson 17 is saying, look, however you might want to visualize it happening, however you might want to create a parable or a metaphor for the journey of the soul and how consciousness began to be focused in the physical realm. There's a story about that, coming into the body, focusing your conscious awareness from being at the level of pure spirit, focusing it down onto a sperm and an egg and the embryo that begins to develop and all of the imprinting that begins in the womb and then the journey beginning of myself, of my sense of self as an individual as I'm growing as a child and how I might have thoughts about who am I and how do I fit in the world. But most of the time I get so busy with the physical body and the teachings of my culture and learning how to walk and talk and function in school and interact with other people as an adult that I don't really start focusing on the deep spiritual questions until my 30s or 40s. It does happen earlier. There are some people, I think it was kind of ironic, after reading that in Lesson 17, it was either last night in Guy Finley's talk or on the Tuesday night talk that we listened to Guy Finley talk. He talked about he is one of those people who started asking deep spiritual questions even in his single-digit years. And then he'd get distracted from it, and then he would come back to it. He went and had a career in music and the music industry in Detroit and Motown. But then he came back to it. But he had an interest in it, and he remembers having an interest in it and reading about it and questioning it from a young age. So it does happen. However, it's rare. And then when you reach a certain age, your soul starts to wake up and say, wait, remember me? Because most of us have forgotten that we are an individual soul, that we have a set of consciousness about being separate from our Creator, but we also have a set of consciousness about being more than the body. And so then Lesson 17 says, so let's go back and start dismantling the blocks to being more consciously aware of your true nature as a spark of the divine creative mind. And then on page 211 it says, how about assuming complete responsibility and therefore the power that goes with it, the power to create your own experience of life and every emotion that you experience. And then it talks in the next section about turning inward, turning around in the seat of the soul, changing the momentum of consciousness from outside, which has been that way ever since we came into form and were born as a child, and turn the focus inside. Not to escape from what's going on the outside, but to understand the process by which we are creating our experience of these things that we interact with in the so-called external world and the flow of life. And then Lesson 18 is titled, The Highest Work is Embracing and Forgiving Your Past. Now that's the word forgiving. And most of us have the Greek concept of pardoning in our minds when we hear the word forgiving. So I'll bring us back to Lesson 3 where it says, in this work, to forgive means to choose to release another from the perceptions you have been projecting upon them. We make up a story in our mind based on tiny bits of information that are hitting our senses. And we only get to register a tiny fraction of what hits our senses, and our senses only register a tiny fraction of what's actually in the world. Whether it's the range of vibrations that can be audible, or the range of energies and vibrations in the electromagnetic field, we are only able to register with our senses less than 1% of what's there. And then our mind is probably taking into account less than a 1% of 1% of what hits our senses. So we create a picture based on this tiny bit of information, and we project it into our mind's image of these other people and things, and we think we know what's going on. In this work, the word forgiveness means to dismantle my false perceptions. How do I know they're false? They result in any constriction, contraction, negative emotional state. And when I say negative, I mean something I would prefer not to experience. It's not bad. It's not wrong. It's just what it is, and it doesn't have a value until the human mind creates a value for it. It's just a neutral. We have another lesson in this work that says all events are neutral. So here's lesson 18. It says the highest work is embracing and dismantling the false perceptions about your past. The text reads, once again, we come forth to abide with you from that place which has never truly been left. We come not as those who are apart from you, but as those who walk with you on the way that you have chosen. We come as those who have sent forth the call to awaken, the call to heal, the call to arise, and the call to welcome love, capital L love, into every dark corner where once the ego or fear had sought authority. We come forth because we love you. We come forth because we are love. Above all, remember always, we come forth because love, capital L love, is eternally attracted to its own. We are attracted unto you because you are that love. You are that love which has been sent forth as a ray of light from the holy mind of the Creator. You've been sent forth not to suffer the world, not to become identified with illusion, but to transform each illusion through the constant practice of your remembering. And here is what they recommend that we might want to remember. Quote, I and my Creator are one. Only love is real, and love alone heals. My commitment is to the reality of love. Therefore, Creator, bring each moment to me that I might learn anew to love and allow that love to transform a temporary illusion into that which extends the good, the holy, and the beautiful. Close quotes. So, to back up, we have come forth to be with you. We have come forth to help you make the choice to let love into every part of your mind. I think it said it in the intro that in the promise that you need to look lovingly upon every place that fear has made a home in your mind. If you do that and you allow love into every part where fear has made a home in your mind, the correction will come. So there's the promise of this book before we even started in the lessons, and now here we are in lesson 18, and it references the same thing. We are attracted unto you because you are that love. You have been sent forth like a ray of light from the holy mind of the Creator. And you're coming forth not to suffer the world and not to become identified with illusion, but to transform each illusion through the constant practice of remembering. We come as those who have sent forth the call to awaken, to heal, to arise, and to welcome love into every dark corner where once the ego, and we've been told that the ego is fear, where once fear and the ego had sought authority. Another way to say it is where fear and fearful thoughts have made a home in your mind. Bring love into those places. There's a quote from the Course in Miracles that says, you may wonder why you need to look upon your deepest hatreds, your deepest wounds and hatreds. And you might wonder that because there's a lot of teachings out there that say, oh, focus on only the positive and don't look at the negative and don't feed it and don't give it. And so people have interpreted that as saying, I shouldn't even acknowledge it's there. But over and over again, other teachings, deeper teachings say, if I won't acknowledge what's in me, if I don't bring out what is within me will destroy me. If I have the courage to bring out what is within me, even if it is hatred and rage, even if it is pain and fear and suffering that seems too intense, it's going to overwhelm me. If I bring it out into the light of awareness, and I bring at that next moment conscious, active, present love into my mind, healing happens. The correction happens. We transform each illusion through the constant practice of remembering the following. Quote, I and my Creator are one. Only the energy of creation is real. Only love, capital L, love, is real. And only the full energy of creation, capital L, love, heals. My commitment is to the actuality of that creative force, expressing in, through, as, and around me and everyone I interact with in each moment. If I can keep that observation, that tuning into that energy and that actuality as a top-of-mind conscious awareness, that's holding the space of love for someone, as we were talking about yesterday. My commitment is to the actuality of love. Therefore, Creator, bring each moment to me that I might learn to love anew and allow that love, the energy of creation, capital L love, allow it to transform a temporary illusion into that which extends the good, the holy, and the beautiful. You might choose to think of it as this is your purpose. Herein lies your purpose, herein lies your function, and herein, and only here, is life, capital L life. Learning to bring the conscious, active awareness of the creative force moving through you and everyone and everything you see, that extends the good, the holy, and the beautiful in that moment. The text goes on and says, therefore, indeed, it is with great joy that we come forth to abide with you. You, who are sent forth from the holy mind of the Creator, even as we were sent forth from the holy mind of the Creator, for we are joined eternally. Separation cannot exist. Illusion of separation exists. That's what we're talking about. But in actuality, there is no separation. That love which has given birth to all things is within you now. All universes arise within you and your true nature. All of creation waits on your welcome. Herein lies the continuation of the theme that we have begun to speak with you about. All creation waits on your welcome. Creation does not wait to swallow you. Creation does not wait to prove to you that you live in an unloving universe. Creation does not wait for you to be as a brick in the wall upon which you may be hit on the head. Creation does not wait upon you to scuttle your dreams and your plans. Creation is innocent. Creation is, like all events, neutral. It's a flow of the creative force. It is everything. The text continues and says, listen very carefully. Creation is utterly powerless. It becomes powerful according to that which you give unto it, the value, the meaning, the purpose, and the function. These things come not from creation itself, but rather they are extended to it, they flow to it, and they penetrate creation through the minds, which all share the one mind, the minds of each and every one of you. So this brings me back to this picture that came to me years ago about this infinitely large cosmic fire hydrant. And, you know, billions of hoses coming off the fire hydrant. And the fire hydrant is just the source of life. It's the source of creative energy. And all of the hoses coming off of it are constantly flowing with that creative energy. There's no on-off nozzle. It's just a hose, and it's flowing with the creative force. You and everyone you've ever known, you can either conceive of yourself as being the hose or having a hose that you have the dominion over. You can point it left, right, up, down, towards the negative, towards the positive, towards the neutral. And as you point your thought energy, this creative flow energy, as you choose the focus for your thoughts, that's what you create more of in your life. That's what this paragraph is saying to me. That's what it brings to mind. Please listen very carefully. The energy of creation is powerless until it's focused by the mind. And your mind is just like every other mind. It's a part of the one mind. And as you focus that energy, you create. So the paragraph again reads, and I'll just try and read it. I'll make an attempt here to read it without getting sidetracked. Listen very carefully. Creation is utterly powerless. It becomes powerful according to that which you give unto it, the value, the meaning, the purpose, and the function that you give to it. These things come not from creation itself, but rather they are extended to it. They flow to it. They penetrate creation through the minds, share the one mind of each and every one of you. So each and every one of you have a mind that sends out this energy in a certain direction. And all of these things, the value, the meaning, the purpose, the function, are determined by the mind that's focusing this creative flow. The text goes on and says, that is why it is absolutely impossible to look upon anything that is outside of you. There is nothing outside of you. All of this is arising inside of you, inside the consciousness that you're a part of. So the text reads, that is why it's absolutely impossible to look upon anything that is outside of you. The great glory of the time given unto you, the time you experience as a body-mind upon an apparent planet, upon an apparent physical universe, the great glory of it is this. The great glory and gift of time is that you remain infinitely free to decide how you will choose to perceive creation and therefore imbue it with the power that either reflects illusion and the creations of fear, or it extends the good, the holy, and the beautiful. Each time you think a loving thought, you have literally blessed all infinite realms of creation. Each time you have become unwittingly identified with a fearful thought, you have separated yourself from the perfect love of creation. And you have denied yourself your function. Here we are using the term separation slightly differently, in that it creates the illusion within your mind that there is something you must separate from in order to find your safety and your invulnerability. So there is no separation, but they use the word separated, and then they define what we're talking about is not, there is no actual physical separation, there is no actual energetic separation, there is the illusion that we create. So that last paragraph again reads as this. Each time you think a loving thought, you have literally blessed all the infinite realms of creation. Each time you have become unwittingly identified with a fearful thought, created the illusion of separation, as though you could somehow be separate from the force which has given rise to you and is your very source and substance. And you've denied yourself your function. Here we're using the term separation slightly differently, in that the separation we're talking about is a way to create the illusion within your mind that there's something you must separate from in order to find your safety and your invulnerability. The next section is titled, Your One Function is to Bless Creation. I tell you, this is tough. This is not what we're taught in this world. The text reads, the function of the holy child of the Creator remains eternally one, and that is this, to bless creation and thereby restore it to the perfect reflection of the Creator's presence. And the Creator is but love. Love, and now we're coming back to something we've heard in lessons 1 and 2 and 3, love embraces all things, trusts all things. Love is the nature of your being. It's the energy of creation expressing in, through, as, and around you in each new present moment. When you finally choose to awaken completely, totally, wholly, by welcoming love back into your mind and by becoming committed to resting only in loving thoughts, you will discover that illusions are just that. They contain no existence. You have been resting in the holy mind of the Creator eternally. You never left. Creation then awaits your welcome. Creation waits for you to embrace it. Creation waits upon you, the holy, anointed child of creation, sent out as that one who is the Savior of all things. You are then as the Messiah. You are then Christ incarnate. To the degree that you become crazy enough in the eyes of your world to simply assume the truth, capital T truth, and become completely, totally, wholly committed to listening to no other voice. For there is given unto you one teacher that I have called the Comforter, the Holy Spirit, the voice for the Creator, placed within your mind in the very moment that you first dared to dream the thought of separation, the thought of guilt. And guilt is the mother of fear. Beloved friends, take a moment, and just for the fun of it, practice making a simple decision. This takes no effort since you do it all the time anyway. You're already a master of this. In this simple decision, observe the place where you are now. If you are alone or seem to be alone through the physical eyes, look at the so-called objects around you. Feel the temperature of the air. Hear the sounds that come in through the ears. If you are with others, include your brothers and sisters in your observation. Decide to look upon all these things with perfect innocence. And say within the mind, which is to use the power of the mind to literally create the perception. Simply say this as you look at each person and object. Quote, I do not know what this is for. I do not know what my brother or sister needs. Close quotes. And then you realize it's not necessary to know. It's not necessary to interpret and to analyze. Your function is not to interpret and analyze. Your function is to bless creation with the reality of the love of Christ. Yet that blessing will hold no power until you return to the beginning. The beginning is just the state of unknowing, not knowing, of realizing your complete ignorance. For Christ does not store perceptions and knowledge. Christ, eternally in love with all that creation is, merely opens, receives, gives knowing that that which is given comes not from him or herself, but rather through him or herself from infinite mystery. That which I have called Abba or Father. When you decide to fully accept the one purpose given to you in reality, there will be nothing that will block your way. Every step you take will literally take you through obstacles that dissolve as you approach them. For because you abide in the mind of the Creator, you know no limitation. The realm of illusion, what appears to be solid matter of people with different opinions, holds no power to prevent you from bringing forth the blessing that heals all illusion. That is why we have spoken so much about the importance of forgiveness. Forgiveness dissolves the barrier of fear between you and what you have come to perceive as other than you or outside of yourself. Forgiveness in the dismantling of that false perception serves as the bridge that brings creation to you and you to it. And when you have joined with creation through this process of dismantling all false perceptions, that word we're calling forgiveness, now the embrace is easy. For that creation rests in the palm of your hand. Creation waits upon you because it is powerless. being the extension or the reflection of thought, you are the literal creator of your world. That world exists nowhere except within your own mind. Therefore, what world must you embrace? Must you travel to some ancient monastery 50,000 miles around the planet somewhere two or three times in order to find the creation that waits on your welcome? No. Must you go anywhere to discover or the ability to bless and heal creation? No. The world that awaits on your welcome is quite literally the thoughts and perceptions that you discover streaming through the field of your unique awareness, and that is all. Beloved friends, there is nothing outside of you. If you would know the Creator's will for you, merely look upon what is arising within your own mind as a perception and ask only this, quote, am I willing now to use time constructively to embrace this creation passing through the field of my awareness and bless it with the perfect love of Christ? Close quotes. First, embrace it through forgiveness, which returns it to its neutrality and powerlessness. In other words, first embrace it through dismantling any perception that leaves you feeling separate from it or leaves you with a tight, tense feeling physically, mentally, or emotionally. Through that embrace, then you bless it and thereby dissolve the illusory power that it seemed to hold. Again, the forgiveness they're referring to here is the dismantling of any false perception that leaves you feeling separate, tight, tense, or any negative thought or emotion. When you have done anything to perceive yourself as separate from the rest of creation, from your brothers and sisters, from life itself, you are in error. Your thoughts are in error. And the only way to restore yourself to the purity of your consciousness is to dismantle the false perceptions. Put away everything you think you want, your trifling treasures put away. Cancel every goal you have every time you're upset about anything. Breathe, soften, and ask another level of consciousness to reveal to you how the conscious, logical, the intellectual process in your mind has created the illusion of separation, and ask to be shown how to restore your awareness to your true nature as love. Breathe, soften, and your perception clarifies, and your connection to all of life, and your ability to bless creation in this moment and therefore extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful will become your conscious possession if you just ask to be shown. So that's as much as we're going to read today on lesson 18. And as always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made from this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you. Hope you have a good
weekend. You're welcome and deserve. Have a great show and a great weekend yourself. Blessings.
Thanks. Bye. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday. It's August the 5th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-581. And press 1. And that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to get dialed in. And I will direct you again, as I do every day, to our website, whyagain.org. You can click on the Start Here button or the bullseye in the middle of the page. Both of those take you to the same place, and that's where you'll find all of the worksheets for all of the workshops, not just the forgiveness worksheets. There are many versions of the forgiveness worksheet that is out there. But then there's all the other posters, the Beatitudes, the commitments. And so go out there and look around, put the tools to work in your life. Welcome, Michael. Hello, Michael.
Thank you, sweetheart.
I can.
And
there you are.
Everybody. There I are. Yes, the old mute button trick. So once again, here we are, gathering to speak of this awesome first century Aramaic technology called forgiveness. And looking to extend these principles to literally every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And holding a space that if these principles touch you, then you pass them on to somebody else. If each one teaches one, it won't take long before the globe is saturated with an understanding that forgiveness is not about the Greek errant understanding of letting other people off the hook, but rather it's a strictly internal process that empowers the loosening of the past, to freeing oneself of the past. So, and I think we are supposed to have Michael there. Is Michael with us, Jeannie?
He is. So I'll turn his mic on.
770.
Hello,
well,
Michael.
Let's say hello to the young man.
Welcome.
Hey there, good sir. Hello, Michael. Mute challenge. Mute
Michael,
button on, Michael.
Can you hear me?
There you are. You're loud and clear, sir.
Wonderful. How are you all
hey,
today?
Hey, welcome. We're rocking. Doing well. Good morning with Aria Rain. And garden is growing well, and we're rocking. Pretty day here, about 85 degrees and sunny. Expecting rain tonight for the next 4 days. Wish you guys to get some rain out there.
We do have some in the forecast, I think, Monday and Tuesday. So that will be a wonderful blessing and welcome.
We'll hold the space that it comes true.
Mm-hmm. Same for you all. And,
so where
and
are you at
so
today, sir?
What's... Folks in Con- and not so much for the folks
oh,
in
yeah.
Kentucky. I saw that they were
That's
getting pounded again.
That's just horrendous.
My.
Crazy.
Sad story, I'm sure.
It's definitely time to do something about what's happening with weather.
Yes. Yeah, have one friend I still haven't heard from in that general area, so holding good space for
well,
him.
Extending.
So you were saying?
I was saying we're ready to rock and roll. What's on your mind?
Yes. Continuing from back a few days ago,
mm-hmm.
I had listened to one fellow, I forget exactly which one. They were saying that the Hebrew alphabet is correlated with points on the body. And I was wondering, first, how you see that and how that could relate back to the Aramaic alphabet.
Well, you'll remember there's a phrase in the or a thought in the scriptures that talk about, you know, not one jot or tittle will be changed of those writings.
Mm-hmm.
And the jot and the tittle were two of the smallest characters in the Hebrew alphabet, and they're markings that determine the meaning of a word. For instance, one of the ways we know that the Aramaic came well before the Greek is if you look at, there are many, many pieces in the translation, but one of them that stands out pretty significantly is in the Beatitudes, where we're told that it says, blessed are they who are poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God. If you go to the Aramaic, first of all, the word blessed are they does not appear in the Beatitudes, and nothing that resembles that word. The word is tuvehun, and tuvehun is a three-part word. Tuv is an attitude of mind, a set of the mind, and it speaks of with that, if we translated that as opposed to blessed are they, more correctly from Aramaic, it would say a latent neural structure implanted by the Creator to guide us to happiness and well-being will become our conscious possession. So that before each of the Beatitudes, it's saying, here's a set of instructions for activating something that you've hidden from yourself, something that's now unconscious, and how to get it active. And the first instruction, the Greeks tell us, is to be poor in spirit. And, of course, you listen to Yeshua, and he says he comes to connect us to that power within us. In Aramaic, it was called Ruach HaKodesh. And even says, you know, you can deny me, but don't deny that connection. So you put that in context with, and so now he's saying to be poor, have a poor connection to that. I mean, it's just silly. It doesn't make any sense. But in Aramaic, what it says is those whose home is in the eternal forces from the Creator, or in Aramaic, Ruach HaKodesh. And the word home in Aramaic, if you put a fly speck on it, a dot, and I'm not sure which character that would be, the jot or the tittle, you put that dot on it, and the word home is changed to poor. So who knows when the Greeks were reading a manuscript that a fly had happened to land on and drop a dot, and they translated the word home as poor. So the invitation wasn't to be poor, to not have enough of, but rather was that literally instead of your home being in your head, in your perceptual constructs, the idea was to literally live connected to the energetic world in which you lived, moved, and have your being, which was quite literally the Creator. So that's the jot or tittle, and the Greek, the Hebrew has taken on, and I'm no expert in the Hebrew language or the specific relationships of those things, but that would be my take on the markings that change the meaning of words with something as simple as what would appear to be a fly speck.
So there's a correlation there for certain. And what's interesting is the points, and I'm sure the energetic points of the body was what the man was referring to, and how they relate to the alphabet. And that'd be certainly something to look further into.
Okay. I didn't understand you were talking about energetic points in the body. I hear your question much differently now. I was thinking of the jot or tittle. That's what resonated in my brain cells. That's just perfect example of our workshop communication. Did you hear what I think I said?
Yes.
One set of brain cells resonates in me while a different set of brain cells is resonating in you.
Yes. This is the first time I listened to this. He's a naturopath also. And that's my take on what he was saying. So, again, we got to... You know, I hadn't talked with him in person, naturally, or on the phone to see if that's what he was saying. But I've heard something along those lines in the past, so that's what I gathered.
Yeah, not something a concept I'm familiar with.
Yeah, me either. But it'd be something to like to talk with him about it more sometime. So. Well, along the lines of energetic and our body, another thought I'd like to expound on is my understanding is when we are born, we are inheriting our parents' physical DNA, naturally, but also the emotional, energetic DNA, is that correct?
Well, RNA, DNA, the whole package is passed on from generation to generation. And again, you listen to the Aramaic and you hear genetics when you hear the idea that the sins, and of course that word is an archery term that simply means off the mark, the energetic patterns of the fathers are passed, yea, onto 3 and 4 generations. And actually the most interesting part of that particular passage to me is, then it follows up, and here's the Creator saying to us, yea, of those who hate me. So here's the Creator saying, and here's how I hear that statement, is if you're not living in the eternal forces that we were talking about earlier, if you're not living in contact with that in which you live, move, and have your being, but rather you're living out of your head, then you're separated from the Creator. Hate there, in Aramaic, that word that they translated as hate isn't as in a love-hate relationship, but those who are separated from the active presence of love have no ability to receive advice or input directly from the mind of the Creator, which was called the mind of Christ, from the mind of love. So you're stuck with the advice your genes have got for you. You're stuck with the energetic patterns of what the previous generations has done, and that's all stored within us moving forward from generation to generation. And, of course, the whole idea of the forgiveness process of the worksheet is, if you remember in the step 4, you purposely, consciously bring forward and tap into that physiological presence of love, and then in step 5 you enter into the forgiveness process. And when you do the step 5 A and B, what that has the impact of is it collapses the perceptual constructs that come from the generational patterns. It collapses those things, and when they collapse, it opens a pathway into the hidden part of the mind that, you know, maybe is a trauma that happened 10 generations ago. Literally, by engaging in forgiveness and making sure love is present before you do, you take the action, you do the part of the process that you're capable of doing, canceling the goal, collapsing the perception, opens a pathway into the genes, into the unconscious, which includes everything that's gone on, not only in your life, your in utero experience, your childhood, what have you, but your generational patterns. When you access, when you've got that pathway open and you can access the underlying dynamic, the energetic dynamic, and you bring that forward in the presence of love, then that energetic pattern dissolves. That's the actual core to, that's the happening of forgiveness. Now you've got an open channel to the mind that you were designed to live in, the mind of love, or what the scriptures call the mind of Christ, and you've got direct input. You're no longer stuck with just what your genes would advise you to do. That would be how I'd hear that passage.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is,
so where do I want to
remarkable.
Live? In the mind of love? In the presence of love? Or do I want to just have what my father and his father, you know, you look at that other, there's another place in the scripture that say, look to the lives of the fathers, for ours are but a shadow of theirs. Most people are just unfolding the generational patterns because they don't know how to access that neural structure the Creator put in us to guide us to happiness and well-being, and are separated from the mind of love in them. So hostility and fear runs the show, especially under the greatest, you know, stressful, the most stressful situations. What takes over? Hostility and fear. Where's the mind of love? Where's the home that we're designed to be in relationship to and connection to that power called love in which we live, move, and have our being?
Hence we say, why is this happening again?
Okay. Anybody who doesn't learn to go in and change those patterns is guaranteed that's where their lives are going to be. That's where they're going to live.
Why is this happening? Why is this happening again?
Oh. And, you know, sometimes at Heartland we'll get a call from somebody looking for the book and say, yeah, I understand you got this book. Why are they doing this to me again? Or why am I doing this to myself again? But the pattern, the key thing is that it's an again, it's just repeating. All the memory bank can do is replicate its content. So we call that, you know, the mind of man. You know, they spoke of, you look at that passage where Yeshua says to Peter, get thee behind me, Satan. addresses Peter directly as Satan, and he says, "For you think in the mind of man rather than the plan of God." You're connected to carbon-based memory, the generational patterns, the lives of the fathers, and you can't hear what the Creator has in store. Bigger than what you could imagine out of carbon-based memory. But if you're not accessing its guidance, then you miss the opportunities, and then life gives you those, you know, repeats those opportunities to learn forgiveness, to learn to move the generational patterns out of the way so that you can hear what was called the still small voice. Because that compared to emotionally generated trauma, the voice of love, the still small voice, is quiet and subtle, where the emotional pain and trauma is like a raging river, screaming, raging, so much noise that, you know, most people aren't even aware that the Creator's voice is continuously present. We had a couple who were medical doctors, and this goes back about 30 years ago, that were at Heartland, and I actually inherited the shirt that that he was wearing. They had a pair of matched shirts, and the T-shirt had a, you know, cartoon character sitting on a piece of luggage, and the quote on it said, let me get my brain on this. He's sitting on the luggage, and the quote says, "Oh, if God isn't in your life, guess who left town?" Wasn't the Creator. The presence is there all the time for everybody, 24/7, 365. But if we separate from that and live in nothing but the perceptual constructs, the output of the mind, which Yeshua called appearances, if we live those appearances, pictures that show up that look like they're so real about something outside of us, but are creating feelings in us because they're real about us, and we refuse to own them, therefore the mind gets to massage them into making it look like, and this is the appearance aspect of it, what's going on inside of me belongs to you, and of course it's all your fault, and if you'll only change, then everything in my life will be just fine. And
so our choices. Yes. So our choice is, if we're not doing the forgiveness work, we are hearing the repeats of the past through our genes and DNA.
Correct. Which means it's and not a choice at all. It's just decisions.
It's decision. And if we hear, excuse me, if we do the work, we're going to be connected to the mind of the Creator. We're going to hear that information, and it's going to radically change our lives.
That's it, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So now
that's the whole bottom line of the work.
Explain this. That's beautiful. When I was listening to you explain that, I've often wondered why I understand and hear. I've heard different people and talk with them and say they got this download, or, you know, I was in meditation and this was revealed to me.
Right.
Is that the mind of the Creator that's coming through? Can we say?
If it's coming through direct, yes. Now, oftentimes people will say, "Oh, you know, the Creator guided me to be here. I got this message that I was supposed to be here." And then in the middle of their being, where they said the Creator guided them to be, an opportunity to do a piece of deep work comes up. And so pain surfaces. And all of a sudden, I've watched people many times over the years, it's like, "Oh, I just got the guidance. I need to leave. I'm out of here." And so, no, that's not guidance at all. And it's going to take discernment to tell whether we're actually listening to guidance or whether we're listening to carbon-based memory twisting its voice to sound like guidance. And the key will be that when we're actually getting guidance, we're going to be in a state where we're physiologically connected to love. Hostility and fear never comes, guidance never comes in the form of hostility or fear. And in an arena where people have not resolved a particular issue,
Okay.
Guidance is not available. If somebody's got some old rage, and if you remember, the carbon-based memory works by resonance. If I say don't think about the color of your car, what resonates in your mind? What happens? Most people say, well, I'm thinking about the color of my car. Are you sure that's thinking? I'd offer it's not thinking at all. It's just pure resonance. I speak a word or you get this little flap skin vibrating, your eardrum moves. Whatever moves in you, whatever's resonating, the color of your car, is what comes forward. That's not thinking. That's just pure resonance. That's like a mechanical machine operating. Mechanical machine creates appearances. Carbon-based memory forms a picture, and we see the picture thinking that we're looking out at the world through our eyes, when the truth is the picture is produced by our brain. And we're seeing a picture generated by our brain, and we substitute that for what the Creator actually gave us. So it's a form of rejection of the Creator. Ari and I were watching she wanted to watch a video on anatomy a couple of weeks ago, and we're sitting watching, and it's a cartoon, and it's a YouTube video on anatomy for kids, and there's a cartoon outlet of the body, and all of the organs fall out of the body on the ground, and they start to sing, and they teach the child about each organ in turn, when they fall out of the body, they fall in order of size, the smallest organs first and work up to the larger ones, and the whole cartoon is just going through, and each organ sings to you and tells you what it does. So the eyes, when it gets to the eyes, the cartoon starts to sing, I am your eyes, I am your eyes, I see the world around you. And Arya says to me, Papa, they don't understand. We don't see with our eyes, we see with our brain. Arya already knows that. The brain generates the world we see. It's a structure, appearance, generated by whatever's going on in carbon-based memory. And if it's not based in love, it's not true. And, sort of a progression with this work, most people live in a world of distorted perception, all the unresolved hostilities and fears of the generations cause the mind of man, to substitute its perception for the plan of the Creator, for what's actually going on and what's possible. And so most people live in false perception, the appearances that Yeshua was talking about. And then as you apply forgiveness, you remove the appearance. You remove the hostility, the sadness, the grief, the blame, the hate, the rage, the fear, the pain, the loss. You remove those things, and you get to the point where all of a sudden, there's no hostility or fear, or I shouldn't say all of a sudden, over time, there's no hostility or fear left within the structure, so there's no hostile or fearful perception. One can look at an horrific occurrence, in the actuality, and because the pain's been removed from perception, one goes, wow, I can remember when I would have thought this was really horrific, and now I see it's just an event in the world. So one moves from hostility and fear-based perception to corrected perception, where everything that the mind serves up is accurate and true about the actuality. It's still not the experience of the Creator's world, but it's not any longer a distraction from the Creator's world. It's accurate, it's true, even though it's not the actuality that we're experiencing. From there, once one gets to that state, and that can take some time to do that piece of work or that work to clean that up, then one reaches a point where now the Creator's world is able to enter as guidance. And it's not perception, it's not corrected perception, it's guidance. And there's a space where perception used to show up, the guidance now shows up. And that's when one is listening to, guided by, and directed by the still small voice. But if one doesn't know how to do the work of cleaning out the hostility and fear-based generational patterns, they'll take the scriptures and make up all the insane, raging, crazy things about God and everything else that pass for churchianity. and keep people in fear and terror and trauma, as though that were the Creator's intention, to keep us in fear and terror and trauma, which is just ridiculous. So these minds attuned to hostility and fear, terrorism, think of the Creator as a reflection of themselves. And when one thinks of them as a reflection of oneself, then one makes up, you know, here's the Creator made up of the same trauma that I'm living in. So that insane focus of a terrorist mind make up Creator's fierce, bold, vicious gods, and their own fear and loathing is that they blame on others. They fantasize, well, that must, God must be like that. So now we have this instead of love, you know, Yeshua comes along and says, I came to bring you a correction. No, it's not some power out there in the sky. If somebody tells you it's over there or over there or over there, don't believe them. It's here, it's now, it's within you. And by the way, it's not just my Father, it's ours. We all share the same Father. We're all part of the same family. And I'm showing you how to do what you can do, and it's all the same as I. And it's not about dogma and doctrine based in ignorance and lies. It's about and a Creator up in the sky, but it's the power within, the Father within, that he said does the works and that he came to connect us with. And, you know, letting go of the false identity based in those hostility and fear-based messages. Now we get introduced by this man Yeshua to, instead of this Old Testament vicious old man in the sky, we get introduced to a parent who Yeshua says it's that parent's good pleasure to give us the kingdom, give us everything. And in Aramaic, the words that have been translated as the kingdom of heaven more correctly translate the community of love. So it's the Creator's good pleasure to give us the community of love. Do we accept it? Do we live in it? Do we play in it? Or do we get stuck in the old generational patterns of, oh no, I got somebody to blame and it's all their fault. This isn't mine. Well, yeah, I'm feeling it, but it's not nothing to do with me. It's his fault that I'm feeling. It's like, excuse me, you know, you've been through that one 87 different times with 42 different people. It's yours. When do you take responsibility and forgive it? Be done with it. And those who never learn to forgive do nothing but replicate the past over and over and over. Again, look to the lives of the fathers, for ours are but a shadow.
Yes. So using this reasoning, Michael, and thanks for that explanation, is it incorrect thinking when I say something makes me sad?
Yes.
That's what
yes.
I was...
That would always be projection. You know, and more correctly,
expound on that.
So, remember again, you know, the Harvard research, it says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, the max amount of data that goes into the perceptual construct is 9 bits. So we're looking at 9 bits of data out of 10,000 pieces of evidence, and basically that mind is a purely evidential device. And it can only give the evidence that is it is instructed to give, and words determine the structure of our reality. So when I say, that really made me sad, let's look at the long form of that instruction. Mind, I have a reality in me called sadness, I know, but guess what? I've never wanted to own that, never wanted to be responsible for it. You know, I was always blamed for making other people sad. So don't ever show me that the sadness is in me, but build me a picture that shows me that that is the cause of my sadness. And the evidential mind has no choice but to show us what we asked for. Ask and you receive. Now, the alternative to that would be words like, wow, when I went through that experience, I went through such a layer of sadness in me. Now the instruction set is totally different to the evidential mind. Mind, I have sadness in me. I'm willing to be responsible for it. I'm ready to look at it and own it. and realize that this event outside of me has brought it up in me. And now I realize that it's my opportunity. If I want to be finished with sadness, I could apply forgiveness and remove it and be finished with sadness. We have a whole workshop called Communication. Did you hear what I think I said? And it's all about stepping into responsibility language rather than projection language. And projection language is, you made me sad, you made me sad, or hateful, you hurt me, you. It's all the blame game. And when we get finished with the blame game, move into responsibility language, geez, my rage just came up big time around that, rather than that really enraged me. Because my words tell my mind how to structure its constructs. And if I'm always in denial, and you know, remember, go back to our basic definition of denial. Whenever I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, I'm in denial. And when I go into denial, when I speak or think as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, in order to have a reality structured in that lie and believe it, I have to dissociate from the true cause of what's moving in me. So I just created an artificial condition through denial. My take is, we are not designed to have an unconscious mind. The unconscious mind, my take is a total and complete aberration.
Hmm.
And that unconscious mind, that aberration, means I've got all this, and, you know, if you talk to the average psychologist today, they'll tell you 90, 95, maybe as much as 98% of our thinking is unconscious. That's how much denial the world is in. That's how much we've said, no, no, they made me that way. This doesn't belong to me. It's they who did it to me. And so in that denial dissociation state, I have to literally hide that part of my own mind from myself. And of course, by hiding it, I intensified its activity, you know, by pushing it down. I use an example of, imagine I've got a 3-foot diameter spring that stands 3 feet tall and it's standing there on the floor. Can it do anything? Nothing. But if I push on it and lock it down, and I push on it and lock it down, and I push on it and lock it down, I push on it and lock it down, what happens if I let the lock off? There's a lot of potential energy stored in that from every time I pushed it down, and boom, it explodes into the air. Well, if there's a particular issue around which I've lived in denial and dissociation and pushed it down and pushed it down and pushed it down, literally I set up an actual measurable energetic pattern or wave that through resonance is going to draw somebody in to do that behavior to me. And when they do that behavior, if I remain in denial, then I'll take the energy that their behavior resonates in me, and I'll make a picture of them out of that energy, and they'll show up in my mind with my problem attached, and I'll swear it must be their problem. The kicker of the whole thing is, sooner or later, I got to admit, I'm the one that's feeling it. And I realize I'm the one that's feeling it, then I realize it's inside of me. It's not coming from outside of me. Even though my picture, my perceptual construct, is showing me that it's coming from the outside, it's showing me a lie because I'm living in denial and I'm living out of unconscious dynamics. That was what was in the ancient teachings called the mind of man. And we could be living in the plan of the Creator, in the energy dynamics of that field of love in which we live, move, and have our being.
So is it, let me think here. If I'm saying, and this is, I know a friend's been trying to speak this to me, and I'm not quite gotten it. So if I say, my mom's situation makes me sad.
Right.
That is
denial.
The same, that's denial. That's the same thing as saying Joe next door makes me mad. Same
yes.
kind of idea. Same,
yeah.
same
yeah.
vein. Okay. So if I go back to the situation with mom and say, I am saddened by her situation.
Same thing.
Is that, that's still the same thing?
Well, sure. I'm okay. saying that. Remember, again, denial. When I mm-hmm. think or speak as if something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me. Ah, that situation. I'm saddened by it. I'm still telling my mind it's the cause. That is the cause of my sadness. So my mind's got to build me a construct that proves that's true. That's the nature of the evidential mind. Now, when I move into responsibility communication, I realize, and it's going to sound more like, you know, every time I think about that situation that mom's in, man, there's so much sadness in me that comes up when I think about that. I think it's time for me to resolve my sadness so that I can come to that situation with a clear mind connected to love. Gee, you know, I really want to be of support with my mom, and I'm realizing that, you know, when it comes to the mind, there's nothing we know of in the physical world that can stop the high energy wave that leaves the mind we think and thought. What gift would I be best giving to my mother when I think about her, whether I'm in town with her, in the room with her, or on the other side of the world? What energy would be beneficial for me to offer her? Oh, I want to bring a mind of active present love to her. I don't want to bring this mind of sadness. So if I even think of her in sadness, if she's got a matching energy of sadness, then we're going to become like resonating energy fields. I'm going to broadcast, literally send a signal out of sadness. Her antenna, if she's attuned to sadness, is going to resonate sadness. And then, you know, she may just, you know, coincidentally think of me at the same moment and resonate sadness back. And now you've got the downward loop. As opposed to, you know, I realize that I have a lot of sadness, and I've been believing that it's about my mom, but I'm realizing that it's really about the content of my own mind that I've projected into mom's situation. So I'm willing to begin to forgive that sadness so that every time I think of mom, the only energy I send her is the energy of active present love, support, caring, concern, and well-being.
So when one is thinking in those terms, I think I heard you say I have to do, not have to, I would be wise to do worksheets on sadness. Is that,
yes.
Is that? Okay.
That would be it.
Mm-hmm.
And sadness.
This is huge.
And sadness, underlying sadness often is fear. Sadness oftentimes is just an expression of fear. So probably the next deeper level, once I start addressing that sadness and peeling it off, is going to be to resolve the fear that underlies the sadness. And then oftentimes where there are things like, say, fear and sadness, many people become addicted to an anesthetic that when fear and sadness come, because they don't want to deal with it, an anesthetic that shuts it off, very much like, you know, alcohol shuts off feelings. What's the anesthetic that most people become addicted to in those situations, or at least the initial anesthetic? It's hostility, it's anger. Anger is an internally produced drug. It's no different than alcohol. It does exactly the same thing. You take two molecules of alcohol and take the water out, you've got ether, feeling no pain. And that's exactly what hostility does, is it is an internally produced anesthetic that shuts down the experience of fear, sadness, whatever the pain is, shuts it off so that I don't have to look at it, I don't have to deal with it. There's an interesting film I mentioned to somebody a few weeks ago, it might have been you, and I'm not sure it was in one of our conversations, but there's a film called, Thank You for Sharing. And it's about addiction. And one of the things they capture, one of the focal points, and it's sort of graphic, is sexual addiction. That's one of the issues that they address in it. But they also address several other addictions. and there are a number of people in it that are addicted, and the whole film is about working through those addictions, and it's really interesting how powerfully they grasped it, because there are several people who, you know, they're in an AA program or an NA program, or, you know, they're trying to go cold turkey off of whatever their drug is. And in each case, you watch how, you know, the stress builds in the people who are trying to avoid their addiction. The stress builds when they're holding goals that other people aren't fulfilling for them, and they don't know to cancel those goals. So each time somebody doesn't fulfill a goal, their stress goes up. Their stress goes up. When one hits excessive stress, that's when they need their addictive substance. And they capture in this film, if you rent it and watch it, it's pretty powerful. Each time, and in rotation throughout the film, different characters come against their addiction, and, you know, their stress is up because of family situation, you know, goals they have for family and such. And each time before they, and you can just see the stress building and, uh-oh, they're going to fall off the wagon. But before they do, each time they go into hostility and rage. And when that's not enough, that's when people go to their, you know, their morphine or their alcohol or their sex, whatever their addiction is. So that oftentimes sadness, underlying fear, hostility, addiction, and of course the hostility will be pointed toward the person who seems to be the cause, and that is the person who's not fulfilling the goal that I hold for them. And the importance of forgiving, the importance of canceling the goal to collapse the underlying, the unconscious pain that's being projected into the brain's image of that individual, getting that to collapse so that I can go to it directly and work through it, rather than simply play the projection game that it's all outside of me and all everybody else's fault. And, you know, that's the piece of forgiveness. I understand so well, you know, having gone through this, why the Greeks made forgiveness about how I'm going to let you off the hook. Number one, the Greek, you know, the Greek gods wanted to control men, wanted to run their lives. The way you run somebody is keep them in hostility and fear. Keep them drugged. They're stupid. They're controllable. And so forgiveness became about letting them off the hook, which never removes the internal stress that people are under. And all the king had to do was resonate somebody's internal stress, and they owned them again. They could control them again. And, you know, I mean, I was taught in that system my whole life. That was my whole training up till I came into the Aramaic. And it literally took me to explain what I just explained to you in the last 10 minutes, literally took me 35 years of full-time work with the Aramaic to understand why you would do such a silly thing as cancel a perfectly good goal and call that forgiveness. Because the goal is the thing that drives the perceptual construct based in pain. And as long as we're looking at the perceptual construct based in pain, we have a very clear picture of whose fault it is. And it's always somebody out there. It's always them. But when I realize that that process, that perceptual construct that shows me that it's them, is driven by a goal, and I cancel the goal, the word forgive in Aramaic is shebek, it means to cancel. When I cancel that goal, that perception collapses. And that's what gives me access to the underlying hidden generational pain. It gives me the opportunity to clear it out. It took me 35 years to understand that. You know, I mean, I taught the canceling of goals from the first time I heard that in Aramaic, the word forgive, shebag, literally means to cancel. I never knew why it worked. I just knew it worked. And then over the years, it was like I would get piece by piece by piece. And then finally it was, oh, now I got it. Why would I cancel a perfectly good, wonderful goal that I have for this object of attention that's not cooperating with me? Because every time I load that, it's not that there's anything wrong with the goal, but every time I load that goal, it resonates my pain, and I project my pain into my brain's image of them. and they show up in my mind with my problem attached, and I really believe it's their problem because I have this visual picture. I have this actual picture of them. But the picture's an hallucination. It's an appearance. That's a result of my dissociated content mixed with the goal that I'm holding. Now, that's something that most people have to hear, usually at least, you know, probably 100, 200, 300 times to finally go, oh, that's what's happening. And it took me 35 years. And I mean, you know, the main workshop on forgiveness, why is this happening to me again? There are times when I've done that workshop three times in a day over a period of 35 years. And finally, it was like, oh, here it is. Here's why you do that. It just seems so counterintuitive and ridiculous. But when you understand that, that perceptual construct is driven by goals, controlled by goals, and goals access content, and perceptions more is the perceptions that show up in the mind always tell the person themselves more about the content of their mind than the world they think they're looking at. Because when there's hostility or fear, it's all corrupt data, and it's all done with smoke and mirrors. It's all projection. We're not designed, our physiology is not designed to even be able to generate pain, rage, sadness, grief, hatred, vengeance. We're not designed for that. That's all an aberration. And it's an aberration that energetically destroys tissue, destroys physiology. You know, remember that the wages of sin is death, and then you realize sin just is an archery term that means off the mark. When I put an energy that into a device is designed to incarnate love, when I put the energy of hostility or fear into it, it destroys, it eats at it, it starts to break it down. And that's what results literally in physical death. And physical diseases. All physical diseases are an aberration created by energetic patterns that don't belong within the structure. And of course, our generations have been doing it forever, and everybody that we've ever seen is doing it, so that must be the way it's designed to work. Blame everybody, get them to change, fix them, never take responsibility yourself. I mean, which one of us wasn't born in that world?
Yes, indeed. Well, I know I've heard this a time or two before in my few months here, and I thought the same thing. What are they talking about? Cancel a perfectly good goal. What's wrong with that goal? And I've got a few more cells clicking right
now.
You
got it.
So
you got it.
We're on
so,
path.
You know, gee, I have this goal for such and such to just take care of mom properly. Well, that's a wonderful goal. I mean, everybody should have that goal for the caretaker of one's mom, of course. But Michael, you're telling me to cancel it. That's ridiculous. Why would I do that? Well, I agree. It is a perfectly good goal. And the problem isn't the goal. The problem is that if you load it in your mind and it brings you into some form of hostility or fear, you have a problem. And you cancel the goal to access. Exactly. You cancel the goal to access the unresolved energy in you. And once that's resolved, then you are able to enter the mind of love and you'll be guided as exactly what your role is in order to resolve that problem situation rather than just reinforce it and play the blame game.
Mm-hmm.
So usually it's a perfectly wonderful goal that we suggest people cancel. A goal that would be reasonable for everybody to hold in that situation, because the problem isn't the goal. You're not canceling because there's something wrong with the goal. It's what the goal resonates inside of you that creates distorted perception. That is the problem. And by canceling the goal, you get to access that deeper hidden part of the mind and clean it out and get free of it. And I mean, I've seen people who... I've had people who came to a workshop and reported, like, you know, 2 weeks later, you know, I came to your workshop and I had cancer. And I just got back from the doctor and I've got a clean bill of health. I've had people who, I mean, they've had immediate traumatic situations, physically, mentally, emotionally, and those situations disappear like that. And I've had other people who have to work at it a little longer, like myself.
You know,
I love what Richard Bach says. He says, we teach best that which we know most need to learn. So you can see what it is I need to learn here.
Yeah, I think we're all there. And we all got to get this. So your thought on the wages of sin is death brings something to mind for me that I listen to many of these practitioners, these professionals, and saying, you know, the cause of all disease, inflammation or lack of nitric oxide or this or that. But I'm thinking that that's the physical side, and then there's the emotional side, which you're speaking of, which may actually be first, which causes the inflammation, which causes the disease. Would that be proper?
The mechanical expression of it is just the mechanism by which that energy, that aberrant energy, acts. You know, if we listen to Einstein, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. You don't have a physical body. You have an energetic body. The energies you put in either support it being in its highest integrated form, or each time you sin, and remember again, that word sin simply means off the mark. Each time you put an energy in that doesn't belong, and the mind functions through every cell in the structure, then wherever that mind energy is stored, that cell is distorted. Literally, when you think a thought, what the cell biologists are showing is that when you think a thought, that thought produces a neuropeptide, a molecule, a literal molecule appears in the body. It circulates around in the structure until it finds a cell where the receptor site it matches, lands on the receptor site, and if you were sitting inside the cell when that neuropeptide landed on the cell, what you would see as it inserts itself, you'd see what you call chemistry coming into the cell. And it would be, if it's a, let's say you've got a cell that's designed to function out of love and to be connected as its energy supply of love, and a thought of rage comes in, then the chemistry of rage is going to be what shows up in the cell, and now the cell's function is going to be distorted, and to defend itself, it's going to create inflammation. So there's the mechanical way the structure is trying to defend itself against that assault from the energy of rage that never belonged in the cell in the first place. Forgiveness, the skill we're inviting people to develop, and the practice is to learn how to literally, you know, if you imagined, you know, take your right hand and cup it with your fingers spread apart, and then take your left hand and take the fingers and interweave them and look from within as the fingers show up in the cup. That's the aberrant chemistry. What we're inviting people to do is to develop the skill and the ability to withdraw. Now, pull your hand out of its interlock place, withdraw the neuropeptide from the cell, understand what it is, expose it to active present love, and it disappears. That's forgiveness. And when that happens, the instant that happens, the disease goes away. Like, the instant that happens. Because it's not a physical structure, it's a very complex energy system, and when you take an interfering energy out, the mechanical way that the interfering energy expresses is now gone, and the cell, the organ, whatever it is, instantly restructures itself. People call it miraculous because they didn't know what was going on and went, wow, that was quite a change. There's nothing miraculous about it when you realize it's just physics. It's just the way it works.
Back to Einstein.
Back to Einstein.
Yep. It's energy. Well, that's a lot to chew on for the weekend. Beautiful.
It's a fun process.
Mm-hmm.
Well, any other thoughts for you, sir?
that's where we need to be. No, not right now. I'm going to mull over this again, and I thank you and Jeannie so much.
All right, we'll hold the space. Be blessed.
Yes, thank you, Michael.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
I'm not sure how much we can get in 5 minutes, but we have Michelle. You're on the line.
Oh, well, hey there. Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks. Oh, yeah, I lost Alyssa. So we were just going to call in. Maybe we'll try to reschedule another time. So, share.
Okay. Cool.
I think it's too much to
shut
up.
Okay.
Okay, let's just say, forgiveness works. That's my message for the day. I remember
well that first workshop that you came to and the quote-unquote physical healing you had that changed your life. That was pretty powerful.
Ironic, I guess, that when I was attending,
is your mouth
my
close
former
to your microphone? Your voice is kind of cutting in and out a little bit. Can you get closer to your microphone?
Yeah, when I was at my former husband's funeral last week, I felt almost a need to be more somber outwardly because I was so peaceful and complete inside, and I was excited to see the people I hadn't seen in a while and, you know, had to tone down my joy.
Right.
Because it wasn't appropriate.
People wouldn't understand. Yeah.
And I've done too much work and was so complete, and it was a beautiful experience and grateful for the tools. Use them, you know, extensively during that whole process over the last 6 years. And so when it came time for him to leave his body, I was so complete and you know, and my children were just starting their journey of mourning. So Alyssa was actually stressed to a point where she went to the hospital because
her
symptoms were so severe for 2 days that she had, you know, convinced herself that she was having a heart attack or a stroke or some other, you know, serious condition. And so when I found out, I said, okay, let's, you know, what do? Okay, you're fine, and they send you home. And basically, I learned her baseline. And so that's what had us commence a breath session. So that said, well, instead of going to ER, let's do a breath session. And then, you know, and she got in the call and explain from her perspective, you know, the value and success of that, her addressing her fears.
Sweet. Well, we'll look forward to hearing her her story of it. What happened from the inside for her? That'll be a powerful example for everybody when you have the chance to do that.
So. Okay. Yeah. No. We'll.
Sweet.
Soon.
Okay, all right. Lots of love and blessings. Take care. All right. Well, thank you everybody for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It is an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.